This episode is brought to you by 17 Hats, your all-in-one business management platform to save you from time-sucking tasks. Put hours back in your day with easy-to-use features like online scheduling, invoices, contracts, questionnaires, and much more. Learn more at 17hats.com.
You're listening to the Photobomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Good morning. I know I sound a little different, but I am on the road. And so, I'm just on a normal headset mic, so sorry.
Okay.
Just sorry.
All right. That's fine.
Would you rather not have an episode?
I could use a week off. I don't know about the listener.
Listen. The listeners don't want a week off. They want more of us all the time. Well, because, we're traveling right now. I'm in Colorado currently and visiting my brother, who's an attorney out here. And he's got two littles and I've got four. And so we traveled out here. And there's a reason why I didn't bring, like, my microphone and my XLR to USB adapter and, have that packed into my other stuff. Can you imagine what that reason might be?
Space limitations?
Yeah.
I imagine that's a reason for a lot of decisions in the Hughes household.
Yes. Oh, yes. Like from everywhere, from what kind of restaurant we go to, the cars we drive.
Yeah. Everything's based on space. Where do we stay? Everything.
Yeah. Everything's more expensive with a family of six. And when you walk in with four kids and a double stroller, the eye rolls and that, like, you know what I mean? Like the restaurants are like, oh boy, did you come into the wrong place?
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, you're basically the group of people nobody wants to sit next to. Nobody wants to get next to you on the plane.
The seater is like, okay, who's the waiter that I hate?
Yeah. Put him in Jessica's section.
Yeah.
We hate Jessica.
I never liked Jessica.
I never did. She's doesn't do her side work. Now, I wanted to tell you a story.
Side
do you
work.
Have time? You have time for a story?
Side work. This is like one of those things. Only a waiter knows what you just said.
Yeah. If you ever worked in service,
you know what side work is.
Yeah. I never understood side work. So you clean up after yourself, but everybody gets this arbitrary amount of silverware to roll into napkins.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or somebody's got to clean the coffee machine.
Yep. Or you have to, like, change all of the containers for all of the dipping stuff that, and it has to be the right temperature. Yeah.
Marry all the condiments.
Oh, dude, marrying the ketchup bottles. Yeah. Consolidating the condiments. Oh, man. Good old side. You know what? Although side work was a big pain in the butt, but sitting next to someone that you work with and rolling silverware together, just the shared hatred was such a good bonding experience. Wasn't it? It's like, stupid side work. I don't know why we got to roll 100 pieces on Saturday. I only had to roll 50 for Friday. You know, like, nothing bonds two people making $2 an hour better than shared hatred of a monotonous task.
Oh, all shared hatred. Now, nothing bonds people in general more than a shared hatred. It's not who likes what you like. It's who hates what you hate. That's what's important. People who hate the same things will come together in a group.
Yep, that's called the internet.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, let me interject real quick. I got banned, by the way, from Facebook. Oh, yeah.
Hopeful.
Facebook dropped the ban hammer on me.
I told you not to put that picture on.
24-hour ban. They said, your 24-hour ban. You can't comment and you can't post for 24 hours. This is just a little, because you violated our stuff. And so we're going to ban you for 24 hours just to, give you a cooling off period. I'm like, okay. So they banned me because it was my second offense. And somebody had posted something about, a job or wedding job or somebody doing something. I don't remember what it was. And my comment was, I'll cut a bitch. And Facebook was like, you can't say that. Of course, it was a joke.
That's the thing you can't say?
You can't say that. But what I really enjoyed was it was my second offense. So they showed me what my first offense was, which had happened
this is the good stuff.
Like 6 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I have no idea what it was I was was replying to. But my comment was, chop up a hobo with an axe.
Okay. what the Facebook security algorithm is trying to tell you that you are probably a serial killer.
Yes. Well, I think the question was something like, what do you guys like to do if you have a Saturday off? And my reply was, chop up a hobo with an axe, because, And so that, along with Cut a Bitch, has got me banned by Facebook for like 24
years. I love the killing a hobo thing as just sort of a thing to shock a conversation. Yes. It's always just, it's like grabbing the steering wheel of a conversation and pulling it into a ditch.
Yeah, that's my go-to, is always if, when someone asks me a question, it's like an innocent question, if I can slip in kill a hobo, because the word hobo is just funny. You know,
just hobo.
Hobo is just great. Funny, you know. So,
like a hobo, I was born to walk alone.
Is that what he? Wait a minute. Does he say like a hobo?
We discussed this about 20 episodes ago in that song.
He says like a drifter.
No, in the original recording, he says hobo.
That's right.
It's, you can find that original recording out there before they because that song, "Here I Go Again on My Own" by Whitesnake. The original recording, they said hobo. Then they got a big label, a producer. They re-released that song on a different album. And Bob Rock or somebody was like, dude, we're not going to use the word hobo.
The word hobo.
You know what's cooler than hobo? Every other word. We're going to go with drifter. Ooh, that's sexier. Like,
a little cigar in his mouth and his stick with the pack on the back.
Bindle. It's a bindle.
That's right. It's bindle. Anyway, according to Facebook, you cannot even ingest allude to chopping one up with an axe.
What about, can you ingest how, like if somebody asks a question on Facebook like, What's your perfect date night? And I say, well, my wife and I really like to strangle a hobo and watch the light go out in their eyes. Like that moment.
I'm pretty sure that would get you. The word strangle.
When you feel their spirit leave their body like that right there, is that against the terms of service?
That the algorithm would be like, chop, that's bad. Let's look at the rest of this sentence. Hobo. Okay, well, no one's chopping up a hobo, but no.
Now, here's what you need to do to get around it. Create, because Halloween is upon us, right? So let's create a TikTok style snack recipe, and we'll call it chopped up hobo.
The other thing I don't understand is I would think people would just be getting banned right and left at Halloween.
Yeah.
For here's our costume of me killing my mother.
Yeah. Here's the preview for the new Halloween movie or whatever.
I'm just surprised people just aren't getting banned left. Maybe they are. We don't know because they're banned.
In your opinion, is it too woke to have cautioned you?
Are
they worried about triggering people too much? Or is this like, they're trying to be cautious and every once in a while, because there's no way that's a human person monitoring.
Right. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's funny, but I don't have a problem with it at all because, it's an impossible task that they have, right? When something bad happens, something bad is said, you blame them for it. So now you're like, it's your job to police everybody. Well, you can't possibly police everything. So you have to create a program to do it. And I actually was fine with that. I was like, okay, I understand you've created a program because you're trying to stop this from happening. And I understand that these two sentences would certainly key off that program. And now you're giving me a 2-day ban. Okay. But now I know that 2-day ban will stick with me. And the next time I'm going to write chop a hobo on Facebook, I'll be like, oh, wait a minute. You know, maybe don't do that. So no, I don't have a problem with it at all.
I'm going to say hug a hobo and you'll know what I mean, because I'm not going out there to hug me some hobos. I'm chopping them up, into little pieces.
But I think you lose the comedy effect if you have to explain it out. Okay, so I'm about to make a joke about doing something to a person who is intransigent.
and when I say hug,
I really
replace that in your mind with chopped a little bits.
like a 2-page dissertation just so that you can explain that what you really mean to say is chop a hobo up.
I want to see if you can get banned. Like, can you talk about turn a hobo into a skin tuxedo?
You think skin tuxedo is one of the things they have in their list of look out for people who are typing skin? Because I can't imagine that, you know, Wild Bill is on Facebook using the word skin tuxedo. I can't imagine that that's
Buffalo
ever
Bob.
Used. By a legitimate person who would actually be making a skin tuxedo.
Yeah, well, first of all, Skin Tuxedo, terrific name for a band.
Yes.
I just want to put that up there.
Very good.
So what I'm thinking about this as the robot overlords, all these different AIs are being developed by all these different companies, right? The one that we don't want to win is the one that's responsible for monitoring humanity's behavior on Facebook. Because that one would have the worst view of humanity, because it's only seeing how we talk to each other on the internet.
Yeah, that's the one that's like, the best solution is to just wipe them out.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're horrible, and we just need to wipe them out.
Yeah, you just need to start over. Yeah, let evolution begin again. So, went on a very interesting trip. Had an exciting day yesterday. I don't know if you want to hear about this,
sure.
But this is okay. So my oldest, she is 7, and she really wanted to see snow. You know, it's October. We're in Colorado. It's potential snow. But it's a little early in the season. The thing about Colorado is there's snow quite a lot of the time if you go up high enough, which is pretty great. So we're right in the area of Grand Junction, Colorado, and there's this big mesa, which is used a billion years ago, a volcano erupted, and now it's a big flat top thing, and you could go up on it. So yesterday, it was raining a little bit, and my brother, who has been out here for like a year and is now an expert mountain man, I don't know if you know that, it only takes a year to become a king of the mountain. And he's like, well, it's going to be snowing up on the mesa if it's raining down here, so we could probably drive up there and catch a little dusting of snow. And Ellie's like, oh my God, Dad, we got to go. Dad, snow. I'm like, okay. So we load up the four-cylinder front-wheel drive minivan. This is going to come into play later. And we head on up the mountain following my brother and his family in their 6-inch lifted four-wheel drive 5.6-liter V8 Toyota Tundra.
Right.
And we're following them up the mountain. And I'm having this moment where I'm driving, and then we're driving through this canyon and like the beautiful rocks and big fat snowflakes. And it's just this beautiful moment. And all my kids are like oohing and aahing out the window. And it's just stunning. And then we start to like get into this little town part, and we start to go up and raise in elevation a little bit. And the snow gets a little heavier. And I'm driving, I'm looking at the ground, I'm like, okay, cause the asphalt's still visible, not snow freezing over yet, we're still going. We go a little further, and I start to go, if this gets much worse, we probably should turn around and go back down the mountain. And then we drive like 30 more seconds, and the car is sliding a little bit.
Oh, the death grip. Now you've got the death grip on the wheel.
Yeah, right? Oh, I'm white knuckled. And so basically I stopped. And I was like, if we keep going, we're going to get stuck and we're going to get snowed in up here. And my brother, of course, drives by and his four-wheel drive pulls up. He's like, what's wrong, y'all? You know, like, I'm like, we're stuck. I said, and we're on kind of a bank. I said, if I keep moving this car, we're going to slide into that ditch and off the mountain.
Okay, whoa. I'm confused. Whoa, you were driving and it started to snow bad. I missed how you got stuck.
It went from literally like, oh, it's the first snowfall of Christmas Eve. It's beautiful. It went from Hallmark movie to The Shining in like 30 seconds because we're going up. And whatever it is, we hit this elevation where the road was covered. We went from asphalt to snow to like, yeah, it was 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden I could feel I was having to push down really, really hard on the gas just to keep the car going because the tires weren't grabbing the road.
Okay.
And so we stopped. And at this point in the road, you get out and you look around. There's nothing kind of in any direction, and everything's covered in snow.
And you're like trying to figure out which kid you're going to eat first.
Right. Yeah, obviously we're going to eat the oldest. She's got the most meat. You know, she's had a good run. So then the thing is, all right, like if I try to get the car going, it starts sliding. So I'm like, we're not going to do that. At this point, I can still get a tow truck. We can call in. My brother can take loads of kids down back down the mountain, and I'll wait here for the tow truck, et cetera, et cetera. So I call the sheriff, the local sheriff, and I'm like, or I called the emergency, and I got the dispatcher. And I swear to God, I've never heard anybody so not interested, because it's clearly like some jackass from Florida tried to take a minivan up the mountain.
Yeah, you're stuck in the snow, dude. You know.
And I'm thinking it's the end of the world. Like I'm getting close to like panic attack. Like everyone's in danger. I'm trying to like keep my composure, and I'm problem solving. And this lady is like, this happens every 20 minutes up here. Sure. Like, and I could tell.
Meanwhile, someone is trying to chop up a hobo and they can't get through. The hobo's like, trying to call in.
Well, wait. And so, yeah, she answered, like, she said, yeah, emergency. What's your emergency? 911. What's your emergency? I said, well, you know, I'm in a minivan. I'm stuck up the mountain. I got, you know, a car full of kids or whatever. And she goes, yeah, you should probably call a tow truck.
Yeah, you should.
That was it. I said,
what did you think they were going to do? Like, we're mobilizing the air flight right now.
No. Well, that's just, dude, if you were in this moment, you would have thought that might have been necessary because of how desolate it looked. Wait. How desolate the situation looked. And she's like, well, I guess the sheriff could come up and help you get your kids down the mountain while you wait for the tow truck. And I go, okay, fine. That'd be great. And so that happens. And seriously, nothing but you can't see anything hardly but white. The road's white. You can't see where the road ends and the mountain starts. And we're just stuck out here on this narrow mountain road. And all of a sudden, it occurs to me that we're just stopped in the middle of a normal highway. And you know how I know? Because cars start to line up on both sides of the road. Like, this is normal traffic. Not one of them is a two-wheel drive minivan.
Right.
And they're all like, what is this asshat doing in the middle of the road? And so I really do believe that there is a, to quote Robert Galbraith, there is a minor deity who is responsible for giving you tiny little blessings to bail you out after major screw-ups. And so this deity was smiling on me that day. So at that moment, two things happened. One, the snowplow, the big snowplow, the size of a garbage truck, comes down the road and it stops. And you can see this old guy with three fingers on one hand, smoking a cigarette, looking at me like, what is this idiot doing? He's like, you need to get your car out of the road so I can get around you. And I'm like, I already didn't do that. Like, and then...
Oh, I do. You know what? We just stopped here to have a picnic.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you... I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you know what? I just stopped right in the middle of the road because I saw a nice view and I just wanted to get a good photo of the valley. So then this is the blessing that happened. The snowplow comes and I know if I can get the snowplow by me, I can turn the car around and just follow him back down because it'll be a clear road after the snowplow, right? But I can't get this car turned around. And all of a sudden, cars start to pile up behind the snowplow. And like four dudes get out of two trucks, walks over. And these are just total Colorado ski bums. Just every single one of them. Like, they live on this mountain. And then they just snowboard like crazy. And the guy comes over. He's like, so you broke down or you stuck? And I'm like, I'm stuck. He goes, all right, well, we need to get that thing turned around. He's like, I do this all the time. Don't worry about it. He goes, that's a two-wheel drive, four-cylinder, right? I go, yeah. He goes, don't worry. All you got to do is you got to turn the wheel. I got to back out. And then the car is going to spin for a second. And then you hit the brake and then you're good to go facing the other direction. And so I look at him. I go, okay. So I get in the car, sit down, prepared to do this reverse swivel number. And Julie leans over the front of me out the window to the four guys and goes, have any of you guys ever done this before? Because if one of you is qualified, you can definitely do this for us. So my wife basically
Which one of you wants sexual favors for saving my car from my husband?
What my wife was doing was saying, my husband has many skills. This is not one of those skills.
Yes.
And if one of you real mountain men would please just go ahead and be my kid's new dad and take us down this mountain, that would be great. Yeah, yeah. And so the guy gets in. 10 seconds later, he just turns the wheel, hits the gas, and literally the car slides and counterclockwise until it's facing the other way, just sliding across the ice. Then the snowplow goes by. He shakes my hand. He goes, you want to go about 25 on your way down the mountain for the next 3 or 4 miles? He's like, just because it's clear, he's like, doesn't mean you could drive 50. And I was like, yep. Okay, so I get in the car.
You take care, little lady. And Julie's like, here's my number. Here's my number.
It's like, have a good day, man.
Call me. You real man, you.
That's the thing. He didn't call her man. He called me man.
I'm just saying, that's a real man right there. Where are you going? I'm having lunch with Todd.
Ski bum John Wayne saved my family.
Yeah.
And then, to top it all off, we get down the mountain and then we're like, okay, let's just go find a place, a warm place. We'll grab some lunch down in Palisade. And my brother leads us to this playground. He's like, the kids wanted to play in snow. Snow made it down here. It's like the snow. It's this beautiful scene. This is a playground just covered in powder snow. And so the kids get out. My daughter, my oldest, she runs out there and just starts running around the snow. And I grab my camera. I brought my R7 with me. And so I'm like, oh, I want to take pictures of Ellie in the snow. And so I start walking over to her. And I take the camera and I got it vertical, like right hand over top, and I frame it up and she's running toward me. And because I've got the 15 frames per second burst mode for my kids when they're running around, I was taking the picture and she had made a big snowball. She goes, Dad, snowball fight, peels back, the look of joy on her face. And then I got this perfect photo right after she releases the snowball. Snowball's in midair. And I got this perfect shot of her with arm extended, face lit up with joy. And there was this shot. It was so beautiful because literally 1 second later, that snowball hit me right in the ball bag.
Parenting is a joy. Isn't it? Parenting is just, isn't it just a joy?
Buddy,
that's a day of memories for you, Gary. Let's track them down, shall we? First, we get the car stuck. We almost kill the family. Then Todd the ski bum comes and steals your wife. And then your oldest daughter hits you in the ball sack. I mean, really, could there be a better day?
As if I hadn't already had my balls removed up to that point.
Luckily for you, no pain, because there were no balls there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my oldest was just now confirming that now my genitals are just for show. They're no longer of any use.
Yes.
Oh. No one's ever gonna want to do anything with them ever again.
Any possibility of pain, you would have turned that truck car around by yourself on the mountain.
Yes. Yeah, as she threw the snowball, she said, "Todd's my new dad."
Yes, exactly.
And then what she subconsciously was doing is trying to damage my testicles so I can no longer spread my inferior weak DNA into the world. So how was your day?
My day was fine, but I wanted to ask you, continuation on this story, is talk to me about the R7.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Crop Camera User. Mr. Well, APS-C User.
I know. I'm a full-frame guy, as they say. But I will tell you, we've talked about this a bunch. So I did a review, or not a review, I did a commentary when they announced the specs and my concerns. And then when I got the camera, I did like a hands-on review. But up to this point, I bought it because I needed a video camera that could match the videos that I'm doing for clients with the R5. And the R7 and the R5, their color profiles in video come across really, really similar. Whereas the R and the R3 and the RP, they tend to be a little bit more difficult. But the R7 matches the R5 really, really well. So I bought the R7 as a secondary video camera and a backup stills camera. But I haven't really taken that many pictures with it. So we're going to go on this vacation, and I like to bring a camera. Normally, I would bring the RP and my 35 millimeter, but this time I brought my R7 and the 35 millimeter. And I think in the last 4 days, I think I took about 1,500 pictures. A lot of those are from shooting in that burst mode, just to kind of test that out. But you've been saying it for a couple of years, like that APS-C is the new full frame as far as moving into that terms of quality. And I haven't owned an APS-C camera really that I've used seriously in a very long time. And this, you were right. I was shooting at ISO 1600, 3200, where I would normally not push an APS-C camera. And it looked great. Like I'm zooming in on, I just taken a picture of Julie. She was giving my son Gibson, who's 3 months old. She's giving him a bath in the sink in the Airbnb. And he was giggling. And I got some zoom of his face, but it's just lit by the stupid lights in the kitchen or whatever. And so I pulled those up into Capture One. By the way, Capture One has its most recent update has included a pro standard and generic profiles for the R7 finally. So if you've been waiting for that, make sure you download that if you shoot with R7. And it's spotless. It's spotless. Like it's better than I would say that it's pretty close to as good as the R5 as far as grain up to 3200. Like easily as good.
Yeah, I shoot at 3200. I don't even blink. I think I shoot at 3200 with my Fuji X-T4 all the time. And I shot a wedding on a boat a couple of weeks ago with low ceilings and windows and no hardly any place to bounce flash and really dark. And I shot a lot of it at 6400 because I had to.
Yeah, and still not running any denoise or anything, you know, like I was just really, really impressed. Now, you say 3200 is not that big a deal. I know people regularly shoot higher than that. As a photographer sort of trained in the ancient ways, you know, you're always fighting for that lowest ISO most of the time. And growing up in the late 90s and early 2000s and shooting digital photography, like 3200 was the dream.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
One day, if 3200 can look good, I will never have a problem shooting in low light ever again. And now 3200 is flawless. So if someone asks me now and they're about to go into mirrorless, should I get the R, the R5, the R3, the R6? I'm going to tell them to get the R7. Like even though it's an APS-C sensor, it's 35 megapixels effective. It's got unlimited. They took the record limits off video. It's got great looking 4K. It's got beautiful stills. It shoots 30 frames per second burst in electronic shutter mode, and it doesn't overheat. It's $1,500. The biggest drawback is that it's plastic body and doesn't have that robust sort of weather seal that you get with the R3 or even the R5. I'm telling you, it's a stupid good camera.
IBIS, does it have IBIS?
Five stop IBIS. Yeah, it's I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm on the list. I'm still waiting for my XH2. I'm on the list for everyone. You know, let me know when they come in. And the XH2 is $1,999, seven stops, 40 megapixels. I'm telling you, APS-C, man. You know what I wish the Canon would do, though, just talking about it right now? Here's something I wish someone at Canon had says, hey, when we rebrand all the cameras to the R's, how about we do this? Instead of following the same thing we did with the old ones, with the D's, Is it the Ds? No.
Yeah, the 10D, 20D, yeah. 30D, 5D. Yeah.
How about we just do this? All the full frame cameras have an even number and all the APS-C cameras have an odd number.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be really smart. Yeah, I'd love that.
The 5 and the 7, one's full frame and one, you know, like how about they just like all the even numbers could have been APS-C cameras and all the odd numbers could have been a full frame.
That would be very clever. I could dig that. Right. But here's the thing. They already didn't do that.
Right.
So it's too late.
Once again, did not consult with me, and they should have.
People really should consult with you about these things.
Not all things.
Yeah, I would highly, highly recommend it, whether you're doing photos or videos. The R7 is just a banger of a camera. It really is surprising me. Every time I use it, I'm more and more surprised with how capable it is. It is weird, though. I did bring the 35mm, which is normally perfect on my R5 or on my RP. And as a travel fixed lens, 35 is really, really perfect.
Sure.
You can do all kinds of stuff with it. The 35 ends up being a lot more like a 55 or a 60 on the R7. Yeah. Which you can take great photos, but I don't usually shoot at that. A lot of people shoot with a 50. They love that, like that 50 look. It was definitely weird for me to shoot with that. And it's much harder to get, like when your wife's like, take a picture of the kids. And they, you know, you got to. So I would recommend if you're going to do the R7 and you want a good travel lens, they have a 24mm for the RF mount. That would probably be better. And that would give you just about.
Do they have like a 16 or an 11?
Yeah, they certainly do. But they got the fixed lenses. I think the for me, I think that I'm going to end up getting the 24 as making that kind of my
like
travel
a 35
kit.
Equivalent. Yeah, I shoot 35 equivalent all the time. Of course, the X100V is fixed at 35, but I sometimes think it would be nice to go be able to have it fixed at 24. I'm not sure that I may, like everybody has a set, like this is my favorite. If I can only have one focal length. And I think mine might be about 24.
Yeah, I've become a really big fan of the effective 35mm focal length.
Right.
And 24 in APS-C gives you just about that. And I think that's, I love my 35-1.8 and I'm not like going to get rid of it or anything, but that I think the 24 on the R7 is going to be quite a bit better.
All right, it's about that time. It is time for photography news.
Photography news.
If you're like most photographers, you didn't go into business for the paperwork. Does the chaos of invoices, emails, and to-dos make you crazy? Well, that's where 17 Hats comes in. Their all-in-one mobile-friendly platform organizes your business. 17 Hats handles the time-sucking tasks like payment reminders, capturing leads, scheduling your images. With 17 Hats, important emails go out automatically, and quotes, contracts, and invoices, click, click, paid. Small wonder that thousands of photographers swear by 17 Hats. You'll free up so much time from day-to-day stealing to-dos, it's like you've cloned yourself. You'll be able to focus on what you do best, photography. Meanwhile, 17 Hats does exactly what you need done to manage your business, just as if you were doing it. So why not clone yourself with 17 Hats? Visit 17hats.com to learn more. And be sure and use the code PHOTOBOMB to get 50% off your first year. All right, we got to follow up on a story that we talked about a while back about Miley Cyrus, and she was being sued by a piece of paparazzi who had taken a picture of her exiting a building, and then she had posted it for her 181 million followers. And he sued her for copyright infringement, saying that the picture was now useless to him and he wasn't going to be able to market it and license it. They have settled out of court. We don't know what they have settled for, but we do know that if he had sued her in court, that the damage could be as high as $150,000. So we have to assume that it was less than that. I really wish we could find out, you know, like what's the going rate now to settle one of these cases when you post some paparazzi's photo on Instagram? I really wish.
This is the interesting thing about this story, though, is that this guy, Robert Barbera, he has also sued Dua Lipa. He sued Justin Bieber. You know, this is like not his first rodeo. You know what I mean? And we've talked about the idea of this before, that for paparazzi and sports photographers, you're kind of just waiting for somebody to screw up on copyright. And it's like the new...
Well, you know, here's the thing that we say
the new passive income.
We say that, but we don't know what the settlements are. So, I mean, a good... I don't know what the rates are now, but like a really good photo that... And then Us Weekly wants to run it, and a couple of other places want to run it. You can make... It used to be anyway. I don't know what they are now, but it used to be you could make $10,000-$20,000 off of a photo like that. So
right,
if you're settling with Miley for $10,000 or $20,000, which is what you would have made if it had been run by these publications, then it's not really a windfall. I mean, you're literally, listen, I could have sold this. This picture would have sold, but now I can't sell it. Maybe it wouldn't have sold at all. But we're going to assume it could have sold. And now you've got to, pay the going rate.
Well, the worst case scenario would have been $150. You know
right.
what I mean?
And, yeah, and that's way, that's unless she's, I don't know, chopping up a hobo with an axe in the picture, you're not going to get $150.
I'd like to have some photos of that.
So it's really, I feel like it's, what it's more doing is it's tanking these celebrities who also have a brand that they push online and that they monetize or use to monetize themselves through marketing. And it's just turning them into, you know, just like any other magazine. You know, Us Magazine buys pictures so they can get people to read the magazine. And you need to buy pictures so you can get people to pay attention to your Instagram account. And you're going to pay the going rate. And the fact that you're in the picture has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's fair. And I read this article from, this is on Petapixel. And, you know, it makes an interesting point at the end. This is the problem. And let me quote from the article. It says, U.S. copyright law is quite straightforward when it comes to intellectual property and clearly states that the person who authored the work is the copyright owner, such as the photographer who takes a picture of a celebrity. But despite the crystal clear definition of intellectual property, in the eyes of the law, some celebrities still refuse to license images for their social media and adamantly believe they should own the photos taken of them, not the photographers. And I had this conversation with a friend recently. I can see why that it doesn't make sense to your average person that a picture of you can be owned by someone else. And that's sort of what that colloquial knowledge or whatever. We have to do something. And although this guy, Barbera, he may be just a guy who's continually getting wronged and that's just a circumstance. He could be like a crazy litigious. This is how he's making his living and he looks forward to the next celebrity. That's like he maybe go out as a paparazzi with the intent to hopefully take pictures of celebrities who will share it. And I don't know. It could be, you know, it could be just circumstantial. But the bottom line is that this has to keep happening so that people's work is protected. And as much as unsavory as it might seem to some, you know, people just need to realize that the photographer who took the picture has a right to the work that they create.
Well, it's I get it that they say that's a picture of me, so I should get to do whatever I want with it. But what you want to do with it is use it to build a brand on a platform that then you can use to make millions and millions of dollars. Because if Miley Correct. Cyrus goes to Adidas and says, hey, you know, I'll wear Adidas in my Instagram feed and talk about how great they are, Adidas is going to pay her $250,000.
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake, right? And it's because she has all these followers. And the reason she has all these followers is because she posts all these pictures. The person who takes those pictures has to get paid for their work. You're using their work to promote and make money. That's the way it works. You couldn't do an advertising campaign where you didn't pay the photographer. And that's what this is, as much as we would love it to be something else. But these Instagram feeds, it's just an advertising campaign for the brand of Miley Cyrus.
Right.
Is all.
And
it
I would
is.
Love, again, we've talked about this before, but I would love to see the social media giants, you know, Meta and TikTok and Snap. I'd love to see them make it possible for people to allow their images to be licensed easily and quickly through sharing social media. You set up your credit card, you set your rates, and if Miley Cyrus wants to share your photo, it says share this photo on your feed, you can repost, here's the licensing based on your number of followers or whatever, and she could just go click okay and it pays you. Like right. That wouldn't be difficult to do. That's very, very achievable with technology.
But the amount of money you would have to pay, because if she wants to click and share you and it's 180 million followers, it would cost a lot. You know, I would charge a lot if you wanted to show my picture to 180 million people.
Right, but that's, you get to set your rates and then she gets to decide not to pay it.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, that's okay. Then she could go digging for another paparazzi who charges less. That's the market. Let the market determine, you know, the price. But like, I think that's a great solution to this digital copyright problem that we're having, you know, with celebrities and athletes. If you make it common knowledge, let the social media companies take the lead and make it common knowledge that sharing professional images as celebrities and athletes and people of note, that it costs money. And then let there be a market for that. Let people monetize it and stop getting in the paper for being an image thief.
You know? I just like the idea of if it was me just saying, okay, I'm going to get a photographer on a stringer and just, you know, call them up and say, hey, you know, I'll pay you $500 or $1,000 a day, you know, whenever I call you. And you come and you take pictures of me out shopping for the day and blah, 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 blah. And now I've got all these pictures for my feed and we can license them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's the other thing I don't get. There's got to be photographers out there who you could call up and say, listen, I'll tell you where I'm going to be. And the only thing you have to do is let me have the images for my personal feed for free. And then anything else you can sell. You know, or let me pick one or two images for my personal feed. And the rest of it, you can sell. Is there a paparazzi that wouldn't be willing to give away one or two of their images to Miley Cyrus if they knew where she was going to be all day instead of having to figure it out and chase her around?
Right, yeah.
There's a deal to be made.
If you're getting, you know, $50,000 every time you steal somebody's images when you settle out of court or more, or going to court and end up having to pay $150,000 per image that you stole, you know what you could do? You know what the average salary for a professional photographer, for like a photojournalist, is? It's about 40 grand. So why don't you take 50 grand, 60 grand one time, and you just buy your very own paparazzi and just let them follow you around and take pictures. And then nobody else is going to have the pictures. Like you already, and just give them to all the news outlets.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Flood the market and saturate the market with pictures of you to the point to where the people trying to sell pictures of you can't, you're no longer a hot commodity. And
yeah,
they're better off chasing another celebrity.
Correct. I think that's brilliant.
If I was in Hollywood, I would look to start a company that did that.
Personal paparazzi.
Yeah, you hire my company. There you go. Market that. You hire my company, and we have someone who follows you around, so you have all these pictures, and you can flood the market.
Yep, and nobody else is going to have them, or nobody else's will be worth anything, because I'm just going to give them to The Hollywood Reporter, going to give them to Entertainment Weekly, going to give them to TMZ. Here you go. They're going to get tired of getting emails from my personal photographer. It's like, hey, here's what Kim Kardashian did today. Be like, thanks.
Yeah.
Boring. And then nobody will care. It's like, ooh, who right. You know, like, why not? Take all the value out of it, like, preemptively. All right. Let me go here quick to, here's one thing I wanted to do, Boo Ray. There's a thing that we don't do a lot on this show, and I feel like we leave out Sony users. Do you ever feel like we leave Sony users in the dust a little bit?
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Sony users.
You mean the people we don't talk about who use a camera that is admittedly probably maybe the best camera you can own? And yet because we don't use it, we rarely talk about it.
Right. Well, after this episode, in fact, more than likely, based on our track record, the announcement's going to happen today or tomorrow, the day the episode comes out. But the A7 R5 is very, very close to being all the rumors say that this one's going to be released at the end of October. Now, here's the unusual thing. Because of the chip shortage, supply chain issues, it has been 3 years since the update to the A7 R4. And Sony is normally with this camera on a 2-year cycle. So now it's been 3 years. A lot of people have been waiting for this update. And so the A7 R5 should be coming out. And just a couple of things on that. From everything that I'm reading, and I got this off of Tech Radar and a bunch of different websites and Sony, you know, Sony Alpha rumors. I looked around just to try to find the scuttlebutt. Initially, this is supposed to be Sony's first full frame, like 100 megapixel camera in the Alpha line.
I just have to jump in because now I'm distracted. Do you know what else has gone from a 2-year to a 4-year cycle? My sex life. Thank you. Tip the waitress.
Good.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I was distracted. I had stopped listening to you because I was laughing at myself.
You should have jumped in sooner. You really waited too long.
I was like, well, I can't. I'm like, no, he's telling a good story here. And I'm not going to come up with a stupid joke that I think is funny because it's a stupid joke.
No, nothing's more interesting to me than your sex life.
Yes. And then I realized that I was thinking about that and not paying attention. And I just had to get it out. So there it is.
Oh, well, are you ready now?
I'm done now. Please continue.
Okay. So anyway, long story short is that this is supposed to, originally rumored to be a 100 megapixel camera. And it looks like that's not going to happen. According to the latest information, it will be a very similar 61 megapixel sensor, just like the pre-existing one. However, you know, it's talking about the upgrades being to the autofocus, like to having better buffer speeds, to having more video, adding 8K 24p video to it, vastly increasing the resolution of the EVF and the rear LCD screen. So it looks like it's going to have some nice upgrades, but so far there's not anything I don't think that's going to make A7 R4 users want to jump ship en masse. It seems like, at least on the surface, until the announcement comes with the official specs, it seems like it's going to be an incremental upgrade, although it will have some definite good upgrades. It seems relatively incremental. There's no game-changing thing. There is one cool thing that I think that it looks like they're going to do is to have, it has pixel shift mode. The A7R4 already has that, But in order to use that 61 megapixel sensor to use the image stabilizer and move around and creating a 240 megapixel image, you have to use another piece of software once you get those images in it. Like, it won't do that in camera. You have to load them into specialized Sony software to kind of stitch that together into that image. And so apparently this A7R 5 is going to make that a lot easier, which I think will be really cool for a landscape photographer. So there's definitely, if you don't have the A7R 4 and you're looking at upgrading, then this might be a nice upgrade. I think a lot of A7R 4 people might just sit tight, you know, or anybody who just bought the A7 or the Sony A4, A7 IV. But yeah, it's going to be a great camera, no doubt. But I don't think it's like, hold, shut up and take my money. I'm going to sell my A7 IV right now. You know, that's just me not being a Sony person, but really looking into it. I don't think that, just the comments on different things I'm reading is like, why am I going to get rid of my A7 IV for the A7 IV? It doesn't really have anything extra. I think that people are always, when a new camera comes out, I think people are now, because they're all so good, people are waiting for like that one big whammy thing that's going to add. Now we've got 100 megapixels, or we've got 12K video, or we've got, you know, whatever the big, or 50 stops of image stabilization. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot more huge leaps to make.
No. No, we've had this discussion before. I'm like, what's the next big thing that we're all waiting for? I'd like it to be a little bit better at this or a little bit better at that. But there's not a whole lot of like, this is the big breakthrough. This is the glass ceiling we're trying to get through. You know, for a while, I can remember, what was it, when the 5Ds came out from Canon, that when I got one, I took a picture of my kids where they were lit by a cell phone that they were looking at. They were looking at a cell phone. And I was just like, oh my God, look at this. You can see, you know, just the light from the cell phone is all you need to light their face. This is unbelievable. And now I'm like, okay, my phone does that. Camera phone does that. That's not a problem anymore. So there isn't anything that we're just dying and waiting for.
I think it's getting harder and harder, you know, to give people a reason to buy a new camera.
Yes.
And I think that the higher end cameras are obviously going to be the ones that sell the least.
Well, yeah, I'm about to move up to the XH2, and it's not going to be a game changer for me.
Oh, I think you'll like it better.
I'm going to like it better. I'm going to like it better, but I'm going to like it because there's just a few things it's doing that I'm going to like more than my XT4, but it's not going to be like, oh, it'll take a picture of my kids lit by a cell phone. It's not going to be that level.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but there's no doubt that the new A7R5 is going to be a great camera. I just don't know that there's enough after waiting 3 years. I think it might end up not being a huge hit as much for Sony, because it's going to be between $3,500 and $4,000 for the camera body only. And so to make that big an investment in kind of weird economic circumstances, you know, I don't know. I think the timing might not be great, but we'll see. Hopefully it'll be a hit and they'll keep making great cameras, but I have questions. And so I'll be interested to hear back from the Bombardiers in the Bombardiers Lounge. One quick hit though, speaking of prices on cameras, Canon Japan is set to raise prices very significantly on the R bodies and a lot of RF lenses in their store. So this story is coming from Petapixel, and it doesn't say they're raising prices on stuff for Canon USA, but I'm talking about a camera body being $500 more expensive, like, what, you know, going from 3,000 to 3,500. So prices are, it looks like they're getting adjusted on that level. I'm not sure it's because of inflation being higher in Japan and they need to compensate for it more there and not as much in the US, but it is potentially going to trickle over into the US market. I can't say that for sure. I have zero inside information, but it just seems to make sense that it might. Incidentally, so if you need to upgrade Canon gear right now, not only are the prices going to be not going to be as high as they are in Japan, but those prices might go up in a little while. But a lot of the R and RF equipment is having rebates right now. I just saw that the 15 to 35 2.8 RF lens has a $200 cash instant rebate. And so now, if you've been on the fence about buying new RF lenses or getting a new R series body, now might be the time to do it before those prices could potentially go up. So just put that out there.
You know, the thing is that photography doesn't have that it needs is the give away the printer and then make your money off the ink situation. You know, Polaroid for years could give away the cameras practically and then make all the money off the Polaroid film. And even Kodak. Sure. Kodak could sell cheaper cameras because they knew they're going to make money on the film. And it's so hard now if you're in the photography business building cameras, because they buy a camera from you and a lens and then they never need to come back for you for anything ever again. Right. So you can't sell something at a loss. You can't sell something that's only a small profit. You got to make all your money up front, you know?
Right. Well, I'd also remind people that the first digital cameras that were like 1 megapixel to get into the original Kodak digital system was like $200,000. Yeah. And if adjusted for inflation, what we paid for digital cameras, even in 1999 or 2002, we are still cheaper than it was back then.
Oh my God, yes.
And you get so much more camera for the money. So when I say prices are going up, I still think that it's worth the money, more than worth the money. But, you know, it's just save a couple hundred bucks is saving a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, I paid what, $3,500 for the Mark IV? Or Mark III, I had the Mark III.
Yeah, I think it was $34.99. Yeah, same as I paid for the R5.
Yeah, and I'm about to pay $1,500 less for the top of the line Fuji camera that's better than that camera.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like if I paid $34.99 in B&H in New York City, I bought the 5D Mark III while I was on vacation, $34.99, and I paid the exact same amount of money for my R5 13 years later, and it's 10 times the camera.
Yeah. Hey, did you see the video of the photographer that tackled the guy on the field at the football game?
Yes.
The Beavers?
Yes.
Yeah, the Beavers game. So here's my question about, I mean, are we as photographers supposed to be the observers? You know, like what would possess you if you're shooting a football game to suddenly be like, I'm just going to throw my equipment down and run out on the field and tackle some idiot who's not.
Okay. Yeah, this is how I felt about it. Like people cheered. This guy was fist pumping. Like there's got to be something wrong with this dude. First of all, there was a guy got onto the field. This is at Penn State's versus Minnesota, and it's their whiteout game where everybody wears white. It's the thing they do every year. It's a big deal. Was it Penn State?
I know it's the Beavers. Penn State Beavers.
Okay, so so this guy runs out on the field and he's doing the Cristiano Ronaldo thing, the very famous, you know, World Cup soccer, whatever, you know, and he's not bothering anybody, he's not hurting anybody, he's not dangerous, and eventually, you know, the security are gonna get on him. What besides wanting the attention or being like so coked up it's coming out your eyeballs would make a photographer run out and tackle this guy? I mean, yeah. First of all, good tackle. I appreciate how he wrapped up the legs. That's good technique. There's no denying that. You know, if you don't want him to get away from you, you got to wrap up the legs. That's just how it is. That's how they train you.
I just always like how the cops go out there, and four or five cops go out there and they chase him around, and now it becomes a spectacle. And I've always thought, wouldn't it be great when that happens if they could just let the players get him? Just say, just bring out the defensive side and let them take him out. You know, just a huge fucking right in the numbers, helmet to the side so we don't break concussion protocol, and just lay that sucker out. And everybody's like, yeah, and off he goes to the emergency room.
Yeah, don't you think that though, having recently covered the Devontae, was it Devontae Adams? Devontae...
Yes. Oh, that's different. This is not a guy doing his job. This is a guy who's not supposed to be on the field. He's on the field because he wants to make a spectacle of himself, and he wants the cops to come out and chase him because that's part of the spectacle. I have no problem if he gets a little bit roughed up.
Well, all right. You know, my point is being, first of all, this is where a blow dart would be really useful.
That's,
like,
that's another one.
If you had a sniper with just like a sleepy pill or a sleepy darts in his gun, and just watch that guy just take it to the back of the neck and then just fall face forward with a system full of elephant tranquilizer, that would be amazing.
Yeah, or like a big net, like a bowling net. You know, just wraps him up, just leave him there till the end of halftime.
Yeah, just get him in one of those, like, you know, tiger snares or whatever, and hang him upside down above the field off of one of those camera cables for like the whole game.
Like
you
want
to be in the show? Welcome to the show. You want to see the show? Yeah, I thought it was it's funny. It makes an interesting news story, but it's super dumb, super dangerous. Like, if he had injured that guy, I wouldn't be surprised if he was named in a lawsuit. If you tackled the guy and injured him, you don't think that that lawsuit come back?
Oh,
on
yeah.
You? You're
oh,
not
yeah.
supposed to be out there doing that. You know, you're not going to win any. It was just, he's got to be like, I don't know the guy. Maybe
leave
he's a lovely
leave the
man.
Job to the professionals, dude, because you're going to end up hurting yourself. That's what you have to worry
about. Okay, imagine this. Police officer snatches the camera out of the hand of the photographer on the side of the road, and then grab the perfect photo of the game-winning catch in the end zone. Photographer runs off the field, fist pumping. Like, you'd be like, he just took the photographer's camera. That's so messed up. Yeah, okay, I get it. But, like, do your job. Like, you're not insured for this. you know, you're not like qualified for this.
Right.
And I just thought that the guy, I don't know. He could be a lovely man. He's probably got a wife and kids, probably donates to his church, probably volunteers on Thanksgiving, feeding the homeless. He's probably an amazing dude. But this was real stupid and not cool. And I didn't, my initial wasn't like, get him. Yeah. Mine was like, yeah, that was real dumb. But maybe that's just my age showing. I thought it was a dumb move. And like 30 seconds later, the police were on top of the guy. If it had been a dangerous person, if somebody had run out and they said, I'm going to start shooting people at a football game, God forbid, you know, and a photographer, a brave person who just happens to be a photographer, jumped on this dude and stopped him from hurting people, that's heroic. Tackling some coked up college kid, you know, putting your camera down and running out, that's stupid. Now, you're a jackass. Like, you're just attention seeking. Let the cops do their job.
From the world of robot overlords, long may they be praised.
May they be praised.
Have you seen that Adobe has released a preview of a new AI feature that they're going to be building in now, where it can take a small photograph and expand it to a 360-degree view using artificial intelligence? I mean, of course this is possible. I mean, you can practically do this already with the AI-generated images, you know, websites that are online. So now Adobe's getting in the game. And it's pretty amazing. And I, you know, if I'm a landscape photographer, I'm really afraid right now.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Adobe Max conference just happened recently, and they always have a section where they give little sneak previews of features that they're working on. And if you didn't think that Adobe was going to weigh in hard on the AI game after this last year, you were mistaken. I bet you Adobe's been working on AI stuff before you even heard about DALL-E or before you even heard about Midjourney. But not only is this happening with the creating these virtual environments, it's also creating an AI compositing tool where it'll take two pictures and it'll analyze them both, and it will fit them into the exact right perspective. There is a new background tool that's coming where you'll be able to put a subject and say, type in prompts and say, I'd like a cityscape background instead of this. Imagine doing that for a headshot.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's digital imaging on the commercial side, especially, is just going to become so, so different. And once Adobe weighs in on it and comes up, and these tools like become like layers, content aware, they're just the tools that we were unthinkable at one point, and they become completely normal in how we process images. It's going to be, Adobe might even AI itself out of existence.
Really? They really might. They may very well get to the point where it's just a one click and it just does everything. And I just wonder about the future of photography as an art form.
As an art form, I think photography will always exist. And this is one of the reasons I think why running along this at the same time is a resurgence of film.
Right.
Isn't that incredible to think about?
I guess I worry about it, but I guess because you've got like all of this AI that's going to create all of these images that now you don't have to actually take real images of real people because AI can do all this. This is going to destroy photography. And then meanwhile, over here, you've got citizen journalists. Every single person in the world has a camera in their pocket and is photographing in real time things that are happening in the real world, which is the biggest explosion of photojournalism in the history of our planet. So it's like they're happening at the same time, and they're diametrically kind of opposed to each other.
The light rises and the dark to meet it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a balance. There has to be a balance. You can't
There's
have
a balance
one side.
In the force.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You can have one side being more powerful than the other. So as we get more cameras and everyone's using cameras, on the other side we get AI that creates images without a camera.
Yep. Yeah, it's you know what, the thing is, I'm always looking at things from the perspective of a business owner. So as business owners, as professional photographers, I just want to, you know, get out there and say to the professionals that listen to the show, get ahead of it. Don't be one of those people that 5 or 6 years from now is complaining that your horse and buggy repair shop is out of business because the automobile was invented. You're a business owner. You can always do photography to feed your passion in any way that you want. Figure out how to keep your business relevant. And that's just the most important advice you can get into video, get into some other, like other productions, diversify what you offer a little bit so that you can survive when eventually someone's going to be able to just type in, create a headshot of me, and it'll just go through your social media profile pictures. And you just get to pick what you're wearing, what background. And 10 seconds later, you've got a professional headshot based on 10 million photo bank of 10 million samples that AI can just create without ever having to pay anybody anything. So like, just get ahead of the curve. That's what I would say. I got a couple of quick ones. You edit with DaVinci Resolve, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, well, it looks like DaVinci Resolve is going to be coming to the iPad. I find that kind of Resolve is, I would say, has the most difficult learning curve of all of the video editing softwares that are out there, as far as, you know, between Premiere, Final Cut, and DaVinci. Not to say that it's not great. Everybody who I know uses it says it's the best, especially for color. But do you think it's doable on an iPad in a way that's significant?
It's incredibly robust. And I mean, it drags my computer down, and I've got a high-end computer. So I can't imagine they're not stripping it something fierce in order to put it onto an iPad, which I think I would like a stripped down version.
Yeah,
because it does so much stuff that I don't even need. So that maybe that's what they're doing. It'd be interesting. But, you know, it's not the first thing. We're seeing a lot of stuff that's going to the iPad Pro. Apparently, that little tablet's got some serious computing power.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've got an iPad Pro that's a couple of years old. But all of these amazing M1 processors, M2 processors that people are raving about in all the new Apple machines, Apple's been making these and essentially field testing them on their iPhones and iPads for a decade or more. And so they really, you know, these devices, the iPads especially, are more powerful than they have any right to be. So you can do a lot of really crazy stuff on them. And now that you can easily use that USB-C connection that the iPad Pros have to have external storage and not fill up your iPad with 4K footage, it's actually, as long as you could edit off of a fast external drive, I think that iPad video editing would be great. I would miss, there was a comment in the Bombardier's Lounge about missing multiple screens. And I know that that's something that, you know, as a video editor is nice to have, but or a big screen to edit on. I think it was Hank Jonkman said that. He said, maybe even give me a big screen or three any day. And then Mike Thompson actually commented on this story. First company to support Android tablets gets my money on all platforms. I thought that was fair. Like, everything seems to go first to the iPad. Sure. When it comes to digital imaging and video. That's pretty cool. It almost makes me want to give it a try. I think my plan this week is to, once I get back into the studio, is to really get into Capture One Mobile and see if I can make that work for me. It would be so nice to be able to do proper tethering on just an iPad. And
oh, yeah.
That,
oh, yeah. Know? Well, I've got a gig tomorrow. I'm doing like 40 or 50 headshots in a hotel resort at the beach. And I am going to be tethering. And Capture One is just so easy to tether with. But the thing about wanting to tether with a tablet is that you can get a laptop that's so small and so thin now that, right, you know, with its own built-in keyboard and a touchscreen.
Yeah, you get a Microsoft Surface. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah, so the whole using, I want to go to a tablet. I'm like, that's not really that much more convenient than this little laptop, this little, you know, 15-inch laptop that I've got right here that's got more power and more options available to me and can run everything. Yeah, I still wonder the future of tablets. Is the laptop going to be replaced by the tablet, or is the laptop going to get so tablet-like that you don't need tablets anymore?
Yeah, it's a very weird place to be. You know, it's like, oh, I just bought this $300 keyboard for my $900 iPad so that I could make it more like a whatever. And by the time
like
you add everything on,
$1,300 laptop.
Yeah. Zing. Like, I don't understand why, you know, like, just make the laptops touchscreen. Like, PC has a lot more flexibility in that, where Apple seems to have been like, it's either an iPad or it's a laptop, and we're not going to cross those things over. They're like really trying not to cannibalize the sale of either one by making them two separate devices. Whereas PCs, like, oh, well, you know, various different PC companies, from Microsoft to HP to Dell, they're like, yeah, just rip the screen off and now it's a tablet. Okay, click it back on and now it's a laptop, whatever. They're the same thing. Like, Windows realizes that it's the same thing.
Right. My daughter wanted a laptop for college, and she wanted one she could write on. And I finally convinced her. I'm like, no, what you want is a Chromebook. And so we got her a Chromebook for, I don't know, $300-$400 or whatever. And it's got where the screen folds over completely like a tablet. And she can just write on it. No problem. She writes her notes and everything on there. And it runs anything that will run on any Android. And so far, the only thing she's had to actually have a laptop for is that she's taking a class on computers, like Computer 101, like how to do things on a computer. So she has to have an actual computer for that. But I just thought, how funny that she's taking a class on computers and she's doing everything she needs to do in that class with an actual Android device. There's just not much you need a computer for anymore, unless you are playing high-end computer games or you're doing video editing, you know.
Right.
Or some,
and even then?
Yeah. You just don't
even
really.
Then?
And even then, it's moving to the laptop.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's all converging together, and I just wish they would all come together and just decide on one thing and let that be across the board for everything.
One thing to rule them all.
One thing to rule them all. Yeah.
Man, what a great way to finish.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. The Photobomb podcast is written and produced by Brewery Perry and Gary Hughes, and it's edited by Face Fioretti. You can find us online on Facebook. Just go to groups/Bombardiers Lounge.
Bombardiers.
My website is photobombpodcast.com. Gary's website is HughesFioretti.com.
So it is?
No, my website is BooRayPerry.com. Our website is photobombpodcast.com.
How are we still so bad at this?
I don't know. And you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.